Hello and welcome to another episode of the Duct Tape Marketing Podcast. This is John Jantz, and my guest today is Carmine Gallo. He is a communications coach, a popular keynote speaker, writes a column for Forbes.com, author of 7 books, including one we are going to talk about today, Talk Like TED, that's T-E-D, the 9 public speaking secrets of the world's top minds. So, Carmine, thanks for joining me.
John, thank you. Thanks for having me.
I've got a funny TED story before we talk. As you and I talked about and I've shared with my listeners, I did a TEDx talk in Kansas City about 1.5 years ago, and I was walking through, about 3 days later, I was walking through a movie theater lobby, going to a movie with my wife, and a person came across the room and pointed at me and said, "TED." And I was like, "No, my name's John." and then it dawned on me. It's like, oh, you mean the TED Talk. So universally popular, but you got to be paying attention.
John, that is a perfect segue into one of the reasons why I wrote this book, and I think all of your listeners need to understand this, is that like it or not, you are being compared to TED. Are being compared to a TED Talk because it is so prevalent. 2 million views every day of TED Talks or from TED.com or from mobile devices, that people understand now that there is a new and fresh and inspiring way of giving a presentation. So that's the new gold standard now.
Yeah, and you know what's really cool is a lot of I have 20-something-year-old daughters, and of course they have their friends in that same age group, and it's pretty funny how excited that age group. I mean, I've had my own business for years, and it's like, yeah, whatever, whatever, whatever. And then they find out I did a TED Talk, and that age group is like, oh, that is so cool.
So cool. I've seen your TED Talk. It was a TEDx Talk, TEDx Kansas City.
Yes, that's right.
I believe, yeah. I watched the TED Talk. It was about 5 minutes long. And can you pick out the one thing that you did that most people who deliver PowerPoints do not do? What is the one thing that made your PowerPoint completely different than the vast majority of PowerPoints?
Well, I intentionally didn't have any words on the slide.
You got it. That's right. That is in the academic literature now, it's called picture superiority.
Yeah.
So simply put, when you deliver information verbally, people remember about 10%. Add a picture and a retention source is 65%. When you watch TED Talks now, you will not see any slides with bullets, and you like text and bullets. Not to say that text can no longer be on slides, absolutely not, but there needs to be a balance between images, pictures, and text, like you did in yours.
Yeah, and one of the things that I've – all the literature I've read, and I personally believe this, whether you're just trying to convince yourself, you know, not even an audience, is that when you feel something, it really hits much deeper. And I think that that's what the pictures along with the spoken word really give you that advantage to drive something deep into people feeling it. And I think that's probably has something to do with the retention.
One quarter of my book is all on emotion. You know, people forget that in order for ideas to spread, whether you're giving a TED Talk or you're pitching to yourself or an idea or just in a job interview situation, people forget that you have to go beyond the talking points. You have to go beyond the statistics and the numbers that reinforce your point, and you have to connect with people emotionally. Aristotle knew this 2,500 years ago. He talked about in order for persuasion to happen, pathos must occur. Stories, emotion. We've completely forgotten about that in business today. And so when people do need to be reminded that it's storytelling and emotional connection that ultimately leads people to action.
You know, and I speak to a lot of small business owners, and I think at least in 3 of my books, I have extolled the virtues of getting to a podium and making that a big part of what you do along with writing. And a lot of business owners will say, well, you know, I don't want to do a TED Talk. I don't want to be a paid speaker. Why do I need to pay attention to this stuff?
Yeah, and many of us may never give a TED Talk. The national annual TED conference, typically, if your name is not Bill Gates or you're not curing malaria in third world countries, you know, it's kind of hard to be invited to a TED Talk. But and a few business professionals like yourself have given TED Talks. So I don't think the point is to give a TED Talk, but you really do need to be more visible as a marketer or a business owner and give TED-worthy presentations. TED Talks are all limited to 18 minutes. It's a wonderful amount of time, and it's a great model to emulate because people are very accustomed now to that time frame and to that style of presentation. So there's a lot of TED style talks everywhere in America today, whether they're called TED or they're called something different, but it's still emulating the TED style.
Well, and I contend, of course, that if you know, selling involves persuasion, getting people to do what you want in the job, building a culture. I mean, all those things that maybe you think, oh, well, I'm just talking, or I'm just being me, or we're convincing people and trying to persuade people or at least try to communicate our point of view probably every single day. And I'd suggest that what you're giving people is a much better tool set to do that.
A better tool set to pitch yourself. I like to say that you can have great ideas, you can have revolutionary ideas, but if you cannot move me to action, then those ideas don't matter very much. The billionaire Warren Buffett had a wonderful statement once. It's on YouTube. It's a small clip where he was speaking to a class of business students. And he said, I will give any of you in this room $100,000 today for 10% of your future earnings. If you're a good public speaker, I'll give you $150,000. And he meant it. He said communication skills are that important. And what's interesting about Warren Buffett and other people who I've actually analyzed is that they were terrified of public speaking. Warren Buffett publicly has said, I was terrified of public speaking. He signed up for a Dale Carnegie course and dropped out because he was too afraid to get in front of a group. So most people do have stage fright. Most people don't have confidence in themselves as speakers. And so you do need the tools and the method to try to get past that, because it's so important that you express your ideas persuasively.
Well, one of the things I find fascinating is if you look at, and again, we don't have to keep focusing on TED Talks. I mean, we're talking about what makes a good talk in general. But when you look at the roster of people that go through over the years, the TED Talks, some of them certainly fit that stereotypical, inspiring, storytelling, just really practiced and polished speaker mode. I mean, they just do. You see that all the time. But then you see people that are scientists and you know, downright awkward people in some fashion. In comparison to that stereotypical, what we think of as a speaker. But yet their message is still every bit or maybe even in some cases more powerful. And I wonder if you can tell me what you think's behind that.
I think they've tapped into the technique that we just talked about, which is connecting with people emotionally. And I'll give you a couple of good examples of that. Well, a woman who is a Harvard brain researcher, her name is Dr. Jill Bolte Taylor. Jill Taylor. She's actually been on Oprah.
Is she the one that carried out a live human brain?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, did I just ruin your story? I'm sorry.
No. It's funny that you remembered that, though. That's what scientists call the emotionally charged event.
Yep.
Something that is surprising or unexpected. So for your listeners who don't know, she's a brain researcher who had a stroke and lived to tell about it. And she gave a very persuasive presentation that has been posted on TED. But the point is, regardless of whether it was TED or any other presentation, she made it emotionally engaging. One, by bringing out a real human brain. So that was a completely unexpected, surprising moment, which all great presentations need. But more than that, I spoke to her directly about it. More than that, she said a typical researcher would have spoken about the stroke and what we've learned about strokes. That would have been typical. Instead, she asked herself, where did it take me? What did I learn about myself? What am I really passionate about? And she realized that her passion is not so much teaching people about stroke. It's teaching people about the spiritual journey that she discovered after she had her stroke. That's what connected with her, and that's the message that she gave in this, what became a very popular TED Talk, and Oprah discovered it. I don't think Oprah ever would have discovered it, and I don't think it would have reached 15 million views if it hadn't been for the fact that she was connecting with people on a much more authentic, emotional level, which most people don't do. Most people, as we talked about, stick to the facts, figures, and data.
Well, so you've kind of hinted at a couple of them, but maybe you could sort of tie it all together for me. I mean, the subtitle of the book is, you know, Nine Secrets to the World's Top Minds. Can you kind of say, well, here's the outline for what makes a great TED Talk?
Absolutely. Let's look at it in three parts. And I love what you said earlier. This has nothing. TED is just an example because people can go to TED.com and watch videos and watch great presentations. But these are the techniques that move people anytime you have an idea to sell. So think about that. You are a marketer. You're a small business person. You have an idea. How do you get that across persuasively? Three fundamental elements, what I call unbreakable laws. Your idea and your pitch must be emotional, novel, and memorable. Emotional, novel, and memorable. We've already talked a lot about emotion, storytelling, connecting with people on a heart-to-heart level before you reach their head. Novelty, we've touched on. Your idea, in the way it's presented, must be fresh, unexpected, or surprising. And third, and this is important, I'd love to get into some very specific techniques, how do we make it memorable? After all, you can connect with one person, but if that person can't recall your pitch enough to send it up the ladder to another decision maker, then it doesn't really matter either. It has to be memorable. It has to stick. There are some very specific techniques, John, if you'd like to talk about that, on how to make your idea memorable. One, we talk about what I like to call them Twitter-friendly headlines. Which is, if what is your one main idea? What is the one key message that you want to get across? And if you can fit it within 140 characters of a Twitter post, even better. You have to think about that because the brain, and this is what neuroscientists taught me, the brain craves meaning before details. In other words, the way persuasion works is the brain needs to see the big picture before the details. So when you walked out of on your TED Talk, you first said that we need to rethink commitment. And that got people thinking, rethinking commitment, what does that mean?
Right.
Yeah. So in other words, that's your theme. That's the one thing you want to get across. There is a line that works very well in persuasion, and then all of your marketers listening will appreciate this. If you tell somebody, the most important thing you need to know is this, whatever comes next is going to be what they remember.
Right.
If you're doing it for an interview, you do a lot of interviews. If I were to tell you, John, the most important thing you need to know is this, you'd write it down.
Yep.
Yeah, it's uncanny. You know, sometimes human psychology isn't that complicated.
Yeah, it's like a light switch almost, right?
Yeah, Apple does this all the time.
Yep.
Apple is brilliant at marketing, and they will frame the product the way they want you to deliver that product information. So when Steve Jobs came out in 2008 and introduced the MacBook Air, he said, in a sentence, it's the world's thinnest notebook. If there's one thing I want you to know about this new product, it's the world's thinnest notebook. If you Google that phrase, it came up millions of times in all the headlines.
Yeah.
Because he told you, Steve Jobs was brilliant at this, as you know, John, he told you how to frame the story. So I like to think about it as I have an idea. What is the one main point of my idea? And how am I going to get it across in a short amount, in a short sentence that fits in a Twitter post?
Well, and I remember another pretty famous one from Steve Jobs when the iPod was still coming out, and he, you know, instead of competing against the other MP3 players that were out there, he framed it as, "We made this for people that don't want to carry around 10,000 CDs."
Right.
And I just remember thinking, "Oh, well, that's different than the MP3 player I've got in a drawer, even though it really wasn't."
Yeah, that's exactly it. So delivering that message in a headline is one of the easiest, one of the best ways of getting your message across. But there's also another very, very powerful communication technique, and it's throughout most TED Talks, actually, the rule of three.
Right. Which you've actually already employed, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Emotional, novel, memorable. You're absolutely right. But your marketers would appreciate this because they're already doing this probably intuitively.
Yep.
The rule of three simply means that in short-term memory, people can carry about 3 points of information. It is uncanny how many TED Talks I've analyzed. I looked at about 500, but I lost count at the number of the TED Talks, the most popular ones, that were broken up into three. They even had three in the title. Many have three in the title. But often they're broken up into three things. Or Sheryl Sandberg gave a very famous TED Talk, the COO of Facebook. She told three stories. Another person told three stories. Dr. Jill, who we talked about, the brain researcher, divided her presentation into three. So three is actually a very, very powerful number. It's powerful in literature, the three bears, three musketeers, three little pigs, you know. It's very powerful in literature. It's powerful in business. When you walk into a pitch, have your headline and then three supporting points. Give me three reasons to back your idea, three reasons to buy your product. Don't give me 18. Right. You give me 18, I'm dead.
Yeah.
Give me three.
So how do you reconcile that with some of the more the other really famous number that I see a lot of talks based on, seven?
Seven's a beautiful number.
Yeah.
Seven really is a beautiful number. I think I've read something about seven. It's like this religious and a magical number across many countries and cultures. So that's why seven is such an important number. There was a very famous, I don't know how famous it was, but there was some research done in the 40s or 50s that talked about the magical numbers. And the magical numbers went up to about was from 5 to 7. That was sort of the magical space, which is why, and the research was actually for Pacific Bell, that is the reason why the phone number is only 7 digits, because people realize that once I give you 8 things, you forget everything.
So if you have the bigger topic for the longer talk, you might have 7 steps, but each of those steps better have three key points, right?
Exactly. Yeah. If you can at least incorporate the rule of three, because I have so much more than three techniques to make you a better speaker. I've got at least 9, and within those 9, there's many others. But I'll break it up to make it easy into 3. Okay, an idea can spread if it's emotional, novel, memorable.
Let me ask you one of the things that I hear a lot from speakers, because, you go see speakers, TED-like type of speakers. I speak at a lot of conferences, and so I run into the Seth Godins of the world, and people that are out there have been doing that, in my opinion, for a while. And they have very gorgeous slides that are very emotional, and they're very, very practiced and very inspirational. But then there's that workshop where you need to teach 5 to 50 people how to do something. Do you chuck the TED approach in that environment and go with bullet points because they you need to leave that slide up there 5 minutes while they're working on that? I mean, how do you reconcile that kind of what I would call straight teaching, versus what I might call communicating or inspiring?
Wow, that's a great point, and there's a way of doing it as well. The workshop says you still want to inspire people in a workshop. Okay, let's say it's a 2-hour workshop, and you're training them on a new piece of software,
right,
or on a new service. That happens all the time. You need to keep them inspired. You need to make things memorable. So there's still no reason why you cannot divide that workshop, just say the total workshop, into the three things we're going to learn today, and have those breaks in between. But one thing that I learned from doing my research is what are called soft breaks. The brain actually does get bored after approximately 10 minutes to 18 minutes. It depends on what research you see. But we're fairly confident in the academic literature that your audience will tune out of your message anywhere from 10 to 18 minutes, which is sort of why TED Talks are only about 18 minutes.
Yeah.
The point is, what are you going to do to re-engage people? in 10 to 18, every 10 to 18 minute increment, what do you do to reengage people? There's many ways we can do that. We can go to a demonstration, or perhaps in a workshop, you can then turn it to the audience and have them do something that's a little bit more engaging or thoughtful, or have them write or talk to each other in some way, or answer questions like a Q&A, or show video. The point is to break up your presentation every 10 to 18 minutes. Build in what academics call soft breaks. That literally gives the brain a chance to reengage.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. You talk about the you know, we get bored. I think we actually get exhausted maybe too is another. I mean, if you're, you have something very emotionally charged and your people are really engaged, I think they almost need, okay, now let's take a break. Let's coast for a minute.
There is some research at Texas Christian University, and they're looking at what's called cognitive backlog, which simply means that the more information I give you to retain, the less, first of all, the less you'll retain, especially if I give it to you in one sitting. But there reaches a point to where it's like weights, where you carry so many weights, you sort of drop everything, which is why they've discovered, instead of, like in classes, graduate school classes, instead of dividing, having a class meet once for 3 hours, once a week, it's actually much better, and the students score better if it's 3 times a week for 50 minutes.
Obviously, the book, depending upon when you're listening to this, is going on sale early March. So obviously, it'll be available wherever books are available. Do you also do, and I probably could find this out on your website had I done a little better research, but do you also work with individuals teaching, training, advising, coaching in these types of skills?
That's what I do. That's my day job. My writing is what I do because I'm passionate about sharing these ideas and getting them out to a much wider audience than the people who would actually meet with me in person. But the reason why I have this experience behind me is because I do meet with individuals, typically executives, and with groups, sales groups and marketing groups as well, within companies who have a product, a new product to pitch, new services, or new initiatives. And I'm proud of the fact that I work with some of the biggest brands in the world, brands that whose products touch your life every single day. So it's really fascinating for me. And the writing is my passion. That's the fun part, so I can get this content out to a much wider audience.
You know, it's interesting as I listen to you talk about marketing departments. To me, the tips, the rule of three, telling stories, really engaging people, I think is equally as effective or useful in marketing copy as it is in presentation.
Advertisers have known this. Yeah. Advertisers know this very well. They know very, very well how to connect with people emotionally and how to make things simple and clear. Sometimes we don't, as marketers and also as executives and business owners, we don't necessarily apply some of those well-known advertising techniques to how we pitch ourselves.
Yeah. The young, vibrant, good-looking people having fun on the picnic, is in the ad, is how they kind of suck us into, us telling ourselves a story almost. And I think it's probably...
I'm very surprised. Some of the, some terrible presentations are given by people who you would expect would make more of an emotional connection with me, whether they're in advertising or marketing. And sometimes you see awful presentations, and then you see these beautiful presentations by people who you would least expect it from. So I think it's across the board. I think everybody, and I do believe this, everyone has plenty of room to improve the way they pitch themselves, their ideas. Communication is constantly evolving, constantly changing. I learn something new every day. I'm better this week than I was last week, and I'll learn something in the following weeks too. So it's constantly evolving. Have to keep working at it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm glad you brought that last point up. I have probably in the last 15 years given 500 presentations, and I read every book on this subject, including great books like yours, that I can. I go to workshops to learn how to be a better speaker. I go to workshops to learn how to make better slides. I mean, I just don't think you can ever really master a skill like this.
No, absolutely, and that's why it's fun to watch other great presenters, especially people who have transformed themselves. If you watch Bill Gates these days, I've really started watching Bill Gates. He's a very different presenter than when he was at Microsoft.
Yeah.
His presentations are so much more interesting and engaging and visual, and you can find them on YouTube.
Yeah.
So people do transform themselves into being much better speakers, I think, because we have to. Like it or not, like I said, we're being compared to these great presentations that you see on TED, on YouTube, and on other platforms.
Well, and the flip side of that, of course, is, you know, what a rich repository of examples of, you know, how to do it better, too, that we, you know, didn't have when we started this 10, 12, 15 years ago. So, well, Carmine, thanks so much for joining me again. I don't think you told people, obviously, the book can be purchased anywhere, but how would they get a hold of you?
They can simply go to my website. If you can remember a good Italian name, Carmine Gallo, you can go to CarmineGallo.com. And we have a website dedicated to the new book, which is simply TalkLikeTed.com.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for joining me. Awesome book, awesome subject, and really appreciate your insights.
John, thank you.